Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. A survey by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs finds that the rate of suicide among veterans has been on the rise since at least 2005. Veterans perhaps working to acclimate back into civilian life and or struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder are nearly twice as likely as non-veterans to take their own lives. The American Military Veterans Foundation is working to address the epidemic of veteran suicides through their advocacy for passage of a CAMO Alert bill. The concept involves utilizing technology already in place through the Amber Alert and Silver Alert systems to better identify and provide help for veterans in crisis. For the past 2 years, the foundation has lobbied to get a CAMO Alert bill passed through the Florida legislature, and the group has found a new legislative sponsor for the bill in next year's state legislative session. National board member of the American Military Veterans Foundation and Veteran Service Officer Keith Campbell joins us now in studio for a closer look at the problem of veteran suicides and how this CAMO Alert concept is designed to work. Keith Campbell, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you for having me.
And if listeners would like to join our conversation, you're always welcome. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. And I provided a little brief description of what the concept is, but I was hoping maybe you could expound on that in a bit more detail about what the CAMO Alert bill actually is and who it would be designed to help.
It's designed to help veterans and first responders because both of the needs are out there for both the veterans and the first responders. So it will work very similar to the Amber Alert or a Silver Alert. The officer that is taking the call will be the one who determines whether it gets activated or not based on the criteria that's met.
Gotcha. And again, as I mentioned, we have the Silver Alert system for at-risk seniors, the Amber Alert system for missing kids already in place. Would that make instituting something like this for, you know, potentially at-risk victims, veterans, more cost-effective since, you know, they could just somehow piggyback on that technological infrastructure that already exists?
Yes. Well, we were told it should be very easy to implement. It's all the same same resources are there. It's just, you know, the criteria of when to issue it, when not to issue it.
Do you know if a cost analysis has actually been conducted? Do you have any projections on what it would cost?
No, no one's talked that part of it with us. Like I said, we tried reaching out the last 2 years trying to get it passed. And with different things going on, it keeps taking the back seat. And this year we're just taking a little bit more aggressive approach and handling it on our own and not with just putting it into the legislators' hands. Actually, this bill here was written by somebody locally here in the Cape Cod area. Michael Dracorn was the one that helped us put the bill together.
Oh, okay. Okay. And I know the American Military Veterans Foundation has, you know, been advocating for this for a couple of years now, as you mentioned. And I think I told you when we spoke on the phone, I first heard about this from Cape Coral State Representative Dane Eagle. And I know back at that time, he had planned on introducing a bill in the House, and State Senator Lizbeth Beniquisto from Fort Myers was going to sponsor the bill in her respective chamber. And I kept going back and checking and waiting for the bill to be filed, and then just nothing seemed to happen. What happened there?
They had some concerns. The state itself had concerns about it. Feedback was that if a CAMO Alert is issued, that the veterans would be irate being issued on. As someone told me, was they felt that the veteran may go Rambo while they're out there. So we had to do some more research and get into the veteran community and get their full feedback that we got from them. And the feedback from higher-ranking officers in the military all the way down to the newest recruits – coming out of basic is they're going to go back to their training. You know, they're out there. If they're triggered to where they're suicidal, it's about being where they're not going to be seen. They're going to get rid of their phone, get rid of their vehicle, get in another vehicle, get off the main roads, stuff like that. So that's we brought that that information back to the legislation, and we were just told to keep moving ahead. So that's when we decided to reach out to Mr. Dracon and ask him for help with assisting with writing the bill, because in the first approaches, we weren't writing the bill. They were the legislations that they had been through this before with Silver Alert, so they felt that they could write it. So this time we just felt that we understand there's other needs in the state and things were happening. But at the same time, we have veterans committing suicide 23 a day in the country. And that's still not even a real number. I mean, that's only of the 12 states who are reporting their numbers. And the three biggest states with the population of veterans are not reporting those numbers. California, Texas, and Florida are not reporting those numbers.
Really?
Right.
And is the Department of Veterans Affairs collecting this kind of data, I would imagine?
From the information we're getting, it's Veteran Affairs and a few other organizations.
All right. And I think you had also mentioned, and this was in the letter that you had sent us earlier in the week, just in the last several weeks, without the CAMO alert system, but through a network that you set up perhaps a little less formally, you were actually able to intervene on behalf of I think it was 3 at-risk veterans just in our area.
In the last 6 months from Tampa to Southwest, down here to Southwest Florida, we've had issued 3 CAMO alerts that was brought to our attention. All 3 were successful. All veterans were found safe and given given the help that they needed and continue getting the help that they need. Part of it is it's not just the CAMO alert. It's also continuing giving them the resources that they need after the fact.
Right.
A lot of the veterans, when they get to this point, it's because they feel that they're being left out there alone. They feel that the VA is letting them down or whoever it is that they're working with. So again, the CAMO alert is to help find them and bring them home safely, and then also continuing that care and giving them the resources that they need, find out why they're not getting the help that they need from the different departments they're working with. And we step in and try to do our best to help with our veteran service officers and our resources and other organizations' resources. I mean, with the 3 that we've done in the last 6 months, we've had help from different veterans organizations, including Mission 22, some of them even locally here as Wolfhound Legacy. One of their members was the one that found one of the veterans out in Tampa within 20 minutes of it going out there. So, I mean, it's just right now it's hard to issue it and do it when it's 1 or 2 people that are literally putting it on all social medias that they can copy, tag, post, you know, send out texts, get in veterans groups doing it that way. That's how we're doing it right now. So
we know
that. Not that that would stop, that would probably still continue, but it would be a lot easier if, you know, hey, we know that there's another system out there that can get it out there a heck of a lot faster. You know, each one personally takes about 1.5 hours for us to get the information out, to get it out there and get people, you know, copying, sharing and tagging other veterans, get it into veterans groups. So.
Right. Well, and earlier this week, I know you'd hoped to speak with Governor Rick Scott when he held an event here locally, you know, in the hopes of maybe getting him to consider passing an executive order to get this CAMO alert system instituted. Did you get to have that conversation?
No, but we did speak with his staff, and he is going to be reaching back out to us to get more information on it. And again, you know, the governor can easily make an executive order. Is that something that we want? Probably for the safety of the veterans, yes. But we also wanted to make sure that it's voted on and everybody is happy with it and using this program moving forward.
So it sounds like, you know, you'd welcome an executive order because it would be more immediate. But really, you would be looking for the legislature,
yes,
to go through the formal process and get the bill passed.
Yes.
Given that we have elected officials like Governor Rick Scott and others in Tallahassee who, you know, have touted for years their efforts to make Florida the most veteran-friendly state, do you feel confident that once you get this bill actually proposed and going through the committee process that it's going to get the support it needs to pass?
We think we will. The people that we speak to, I mean, we're getting positive feedback. There is a little negative feedback regarding, like I said earlier, they feel that the words were used, that the veteran would go Rambo. Speaking with the majority of the veterans out there, that's not it. They don't believe that at all. I mean, we spoke to colonels and generals and sergeants and all them, and none of them believe that at all. And then, you know, once we get this passed, our next movement is to get veteran safe zones in the state of Florida. And the veteran safe zones, the fire chiefs here in the state of Florida have already stepped up and said, hey, you know, we want to be one of those places that a veteran can come in if they're triggered or having a bad time. They can walk into one of the fire stations and speak with one of the veterans that's on staff until other veterans can get there and build that camaraderie with them to talk them off their ledge, so to say, and again, get them to the right resources that they need. You know, people have to understand what PTSD is.
Yes.
You know, it's a silent wound. It's not something that's going to cure overnight. To be honest, in my experiences, there's no two alike. Do I think it's going to be something that can be cured? I don't think so. But then again, I'm not a doctor. But if you give them the resources and the networks that they need to help them, we see a major difference in people that deal with PTSD.
When we spoke on the phone the other day, you had talked about the Camo Alert bill being like the first of a three-pronged effort. Was those veteran safety spaces, was that one of those efforts?
Yes, that'll be the second one. What the veteran safe zones are is where a veteran can go who's having some issues, who doesn't want to maybe not deal with a family member, but they can go to these places like our headquarters. We consider our headquarters a veteran safe zone. They can come in, no questions asked. You know, the only thing we're going to ask them is, you know, what's going on with you, you know, get some of it off your chest. What we like to do is we like to pair up the veterans with their brothers or sisters, whether it's a Marine, Navy to Navy. That usually breaks the ice because they've been in similar situations. They've been in similar places. Mm-hmm. That breaks the ice. They get talking, and then they get some of the stuff off their chest. At the safe zones, they'll be open 24/7. And like I said, it's a place for them to go where they won't be judged, they won't be criticized, and it's also a place to where they won't have anything in their record that's going to hurt them. They ain't going to put them in any legal binds, no medical binds. It's just it's a resource for them to come out and try to get help within the veteran community themselves.
Is that a concern among a lot of, whether they're veterans or active duty personnel, having some sort of, you know, anything related to a mental health issue on their official record? Why is that a concern?
A lot of the veterans still like to have their carry and conceal license. That is one of their issues. The other thing, the reason why we thought of the veteran safe zones is because of speaking with law enforcement. We hear that when they get called upon scenes, sometimes they only have two options. They can arrest them or Baker Act them. Mm. And if there's a third option to where, hey, it's not a situation where we want to arrest them, we don't want to Baker Act them, but we can bring them to a place where they can calm down a little bit, then get put back in the situation, their normal life situations again, they like to do that. But they don't have that option right now. The options are usually arrest them or, get them Baker acted. And then both of them puts them in another financial bind when it comes down the road a little bit later. And a lot of these veterans that are dealing with PTSD, some of them are not working. They're on limited income. And they don't really need any more legal issues or any more issues dealing with getting Baker acted.
Yeah, that's, I was going to say, arrest or Baker Act are just going to exacerbate mm-hmm. any kind of situation there. When it comes to veterans who unfortunately, you know, maybe do commit suicide and that's labeled the cause of death, are there repercussions there as far as benefits for their family?
It can stop the family from getting the benefits. There's a process there. We've had a couple of families locally that have literally had to fight tooth and nail to make sure that their surviving family did not lose any of their benefits.
Is that something your foundation works with as well?
Yes. Usually once the situation has kind of cleared a little bit, we do try to speak with the spouses or the family members and let them know what they still are entitled to. Because the one thing that we do firsthand was the family didn't know what to do next. They didn't know that they were entitled to stuff. When the situations are critical for the veterans, sometimes the caregivers don't see the red flags. And that's what the other thing that we're trying to do as an organization is we're trying to bring awareness throughout the state of Florida not just educating the veterans or the first responders that got PTSD and deal with it every day, but we also want to educate their family members and their loved ones. Because if they understand it a little bit, they know what the veteran is going through, a first responder is going through, then maybe there's ways that they can avoid some of the trigger points. So we're starting our seminars here in September to start bringing that awareness again to the community. It's open to anybody who wants to attend.
Can you give us some insights on what some – I mean, with the understanding that you know, you're not a mental health professional, mm-hmm. but you work with a lot of these guys. So like what would be some of these trigger points?
Some of the trigger points could be a holiday. It could be a date. It could be a smell. It could be a sound. Everyone asks, oh, the 4th of July in January here in Florida, there's lots of fireworks. Does that trigger veterans? Most of the veterans that you speak to, because they know it's that time of year, some of them can deal with it because they expect it. But then there are some of them that just want to go be far away from it as possible so they don't have to, you know, they don't have their reoccurring dreams or flashbacks, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know.
I remember meeting some local veterans here through the Keith and Gail Doxey's nonprofit, the Miles for Smiles Foundation, mm-hmm. and just learning a lot about their day-to-day experiences really opened my eyes to things I hadn't considered. For instance, one veteran had told me, like, you know, even when he goes to like a crowded place, like a restaurant, he's always got to be seated somewhere where his back is to the wall, so he can be situationally aware of everything going on around, and just something that. I never think about things like that. That's just something I totally take for granted that that's not something that I have to struggle with or think about.
Yeah, it's true. Even just if they're out shopping, in being in the middle of at the end of the line while checking out, if you'll notice, a veteran will always, like you said, they'll have their back to where they can see everything in front of them. So, yeah, I mean, that's their everyday life, and people don't understand it. They don't see it, you know. Some people like kind of judge people because they think they're weird or stuff, but it's not. It's a wound that nobody sees. It's the war is not over just because they're home.
Right. Keith Campbell with the American Military Veterans Foundation is with us in studio today. We're taking a closer look at the foundation's efforts, and particularly an effort to get a camo alert bill passed here in Florida. And, of course, listeners are invited to join the conversation with your comments or questions. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. And I have to say, one of the folks who really helped open my eyes as a reporter to, you know, these types of issues and really kind of helping gain more access to mental health services for veterans was Captain John Giddyup Bunch, who founded the Operation Open Arms organization, which I don't think it initially started with the intent of looking into mental health issues, but that's what it primarily grew into. Is that an effort that you partner with in any way?
The organization has done stuff with them in the past. I personally have not. But, I mean, we do partner with a lot of different organizations out there. Again, it's just bringing the awareness and the understanding of it. I mean, it's serious. It's a growing epidemic. And, again, when the numbers are not real, that's the part that really gets us is, like, there's only 12 states reporting. And the three highest populated states are not reporting. That's including us. Right now, state of Florida, out of season, we're the number two ranked population state in the country, wow, behind California. But when we're in season, we are the number one state of veteran population.
Wow.
And, you know, the reason why some of the treatments they're getting is it's not working is because we're so underfunded. The funding is based on where your home primary doctor is. So when we get into that home that are in season – even though we're servicing many more veterans here in our facilities, the funding is going back to their home state if their primary is not here or they're not transferring their primary when they come down. So here it is. We're understaffed. We're underfunded. And that's another issue that they need to – that has to be fixed in the future.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, there remains this persistent stigma. I mean, whether someone's a veteran or not, when it comes to any kind of mental health issues, and that can be a big barrier that keeps people from even reaching out and accessing those services that they need. Do you think that that's particularly true for military personnel in general, just based on what they've gone through, based on their background and training, and again with that stigma where people tend to think that, you know, a mental health issue is a weakness?
Yes, and that is one of the things that comes up negative all the time with camo alert. They feel that if a camo alert is issued, they're going to be labeled, and that's not what it is. Again, it's the information that's going out is basic information, just like a missing person. Name, last known, what they were wearing, what they're driving, where they were at. If we can ping a phone while the phones are still active, that's what law enforcement stuff will do. It's not about the being labeled in the system saying, oh, they were a camo alert person at such a time. You don't see that with the Amber Alerts. The kids are not labeled. You don't see it. We don't see it with the Silver Alert. They're not labeled. So that's some of the feeling that's out there, and that's not what it's meant to do. It's meant to, one, give law enforcement more resources. There is red tape that they cannot give information out when someone's going missing. I had firsthand knowledge of a veteran who went missing, and the law enforcement cannot share information with our organization. We had to do everything through the spouse, and it took time. But by the time we got boots on the ground and got people out in the area, this was 7 hours after the veteran had went missing. We put boots on the ground, did what we could do, like we do now with the camo alert, and we went to a last known area by a ping of a phone. And about 45 minutes later, after having boots on the ground, they did find the veteran, and he did commit his act of suicide. But it was, we look back and say, why did it take 7 hours, one, to get that phone call? Why did it, you know, we understand law enforcement's got limited resources. Reach out to us, organizations. We have, especially our organization, we have lots of veterans who are retired. They got hands on, they got free time on their hands. They're more than willing to go out there and help find a brother or a sister.
Yeah. Oh, and just as a point of clarity, you know, I'm sure as many others out there have experienced, I get the Amber Alerts right on my phone for missing kids. Mostly I see the Silver Alerts on roadside signs when I'm driving on the interstate. Would the Camo Alert be designed to be something like the Amber Alert, where it would just come up on people's cell phones, or would this be primarily to communicate with law enforcement?
No, our plan is to be exactly like Amber Alert.
Okay.
All the same resources throughout the state. The same exact thing. It wouldn't go with the whole state of Florida, go in the area where the veteran is, you know, and unless they feel that they've traveled outside of those perimeters, then obviously they'll alert it in another area.
We're taking a closer look at a locally based effort to institute a camo alert system to better identify and serve the needs of at-risk military veterans here in Florida. Again, listeners can join our conversation with your comments, insights, or questions. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, or send us a tweet. We're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And Keith, I want to talk about maybe some of the other foundation's work, because I know it's really broadly based, you know, everything from helping family members and also even with events that maybe don't deal with things that are quite as, I guess, immediate or cogent as suicide risks.
Mm-hmm. Our organization helps out, and obviously our main goal is to help occupy the mind. If you occupy the mind of the veteran who's dealing with PTSD, it's going to keep them away from their evil thoughts, their flashbacks, stuff like that. That is our primary goal as an organization. But we do have other programs that also help out. We have Harmony for Vets. That's a musical program to where veterans come in and learn how to play instruments. Right now we have about 8 or 9 veterans who come in once a week, and they work with a teacher, and they learn how to play the guitar. They also meet a couple other times a week on their own with the other students or senior type of veterans that already know how to play. So again, it's occupying their mind. It's giving them other hobbies to do. We have our custom rod building class where they build a custom fishing rod from scratch. They get a blank, and they get all the accessories they need. And over 2 to 3 days, they're taught how to build a custom fishing rod. And then one of the programs that gets used the most is our Acts of Kindness, and that is one of the programs that we help veterans that are having some difficulties, whether it's paying some bills, getting car repairs, putting food on the table, clothes on their backs. And for our second year this year, that same program also helps get toys for veteran families that need it. And also our veterans also give back to the community using that same toy drive program, to where once they know that their veterans' families are taken care of, the excess toys are also used to where we go back out in the community and see other organizations that need the toys to give the kids that can help them get through the holidays.
Wow, wow. So much work you guys are doing. Yeah. Going back to the Camo Alert concept, have you seen this successfully instituted in other states?
It's been passed in Wyoming, which the governor signed the bill, and it should go in effect on January 1st. It's called the Green Alert. And then in Texas, it was also passed, waiting to see if the governor's going to sign it. I have not looked up the status of it in the last week or two, but we believe that one will also go in the law for January 1st. That one was being pushed by Chris Kyle's brother, who visited our organization. He saw what we were doing, and he had said that, wow, that's a good idea. Maybe something needs to happen nationwide. And we agree, it does need to happen nationwide, but, you know, we figure we start in Florida, and let's see where it spreads from then. But they started shortly after they got a little whiff of it, and they've really pushed for it. And the bill is, like I said, it's been passed, just waiting for it to be implemented out in those two states.
Well, we are coming up on the end of the hour here, so just my final question for you today. What motivated you to first get involved with the American Military Veterans Foundation?
I've been helping veterans for years. I grew up in a military family who always gave back. So back up north, it was just part of our life. And I came down here and just continued doing the same thing.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for today's show. But I want to say thanks to my guest, Keith Campbell. He's on the National Board of Directors for the American Military Veterans Foundation, where he serves as a Veterans Service Officer. Keith Campbell, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us today. And we look forward to following up on your organization's efforts.
Thank you.
Our show today was produced by yours truly. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.